in terms of first responder capability. In Katrina, there were excess of 20,000 people that were rescued or transported by helicopters. 400 of those helicopters were civilian aircraft that responded to that event and saved thousands of lives in that initiative. As a result of that, HAI has established the first responder volunteer database where we have over 300 helicopters that are readily available to respond to terrorist attack or natural disaster voluntarily. And we have the ability to locate those aircraft within a matter of about 5 minutes. And we're coordinating with groups such as DHS, TSA, or FEMA. In terms of helicopter tours, 1.25 million people take helicopter air tours every year. That's 1.25 million people that are now oriented to helicopters and can see what a great vehicle they are and the splendor of flying. The other important subcategory to that is a large portion of those people fly over the national park system, and many of them are disabled or physically challenged and would not be able to see that national park system were it not for those air tours. So we're proud of that initiative as well. In terms of other missions, real quick, aerial application for food production, electronic news gathering, keeps everybody informed on a day-to-day basis of what's going on. And in terms of airborne law enforcement, they're protecting and serving every day. The initiatives that are important that match what the other associations are doing in terms of legislative initiatives are important that we point out. The helicopter industry has just been challenged with two bits of legislation. One of them actually wants to break through the protection of the Airline Deregulation Act and allow states to govern helicopter operations within their state. And if you can imagine a multiple of regulatory initiatives in each state when you cross a state line, it boggles the imagination. The other one that we're concerned about, of course, is the bill that had a rulemaking by legislative initiative where the legislators are trying to skip jump the normal process with the FAA for notice of proposed rulemaking, bang a gavel, and create regulations to govern helicopter operations. In my opinion, that takes away from our constitutional right to have notice of proposed rulemaking occur and for us to be part of the process and work with the experts in the government agencies rather than have the latest knee-jerk reaction, soundbite, cause us to be hindered with regulations into the future. I think what's important, too, is from my personal perspective as a fixed-wing and helicopter pilot and instructor and flying professionally and for personal use, it's quite obvious to me, and I'm sure all of us, we all share the same airspace. We all have the same issues. And if we don't stay united, we're not going to be successful in our initiatives. So from my standpoint in HAI, we're committed to work with all these other associations and you in the community to protect our right to the airspace and provide us with a good working environment. So thanks.
Thank you, Matt. I'd like to ask Craig Fuller to tell us about one of the most significant initiatives that's been started in the recent history of aviation, GA Serves America.
Tom, thank you very much. I feel a little bit like our good friend, the former Senator Howard Baker, who used to say on occasions like this that everything that's important to say has been said. I just haven't had a chance to say it. So I will talk a little bit about that. I do want to start, though, by really saying how much we appreciate being here, all of us, how much we appreciate this panel. It's important for us, because we do all work together, to be seen together. This is such a wonderful gathering. I have to tell you that several of the AOPA staff leadership and I flew out here, I don't know, 2 or 3 months ago at Tom's invitation to talk about how we could work more effectively together. And we actually started the process by Tom getting in one of the vehicles and driving us around the grounds, which I enjoyed. But I must say, this man has such a vision for what is going to happen that you believe it's going to happen, but you can't quite see it as vividly as he does. And when we flew in here yesterday, I was in the left seat of 4 Golf Alpha, and just to see the crowd that had already formed and to see this new layout here was fabulous. So let's give this guy a hand and all of his team for what they're doing. Thank you. You know, a number of very important things have been said, although that 1.5 million people that have been in helicopters, I think Tom and I would like the list, because we can attract them to one or both of our organizations, I hope. Well, you've heard about some of the issues, and I kind of want to pick up where Ed finished, which is to say that we looked long and hard early this year at opinion leaders around the country. Now, opinion leaders are an interesting group to try to analyze because they're not always so easy for pollsters to find. They're really defined as people much like the people here, but people who get involved in organizations, who donate money, who get involved politically, who speak out in their communities, who write letters to the editor. They're people who are engaged. They're not necessarily people who are involved in aviation, but they're people who are engaged. And when you run for office or serve in public office, it's the opinion leader community that you really care a great deal about, because they're going to shape the way people are viewed among your constituency. There's a book written about the tipping point. It's kind of the same concept. There are experts in certain areas, and you want to know what they think, and you also want to influence them. And as we were comparing notes, as I was coming into this wonderful job that I now have the good fortune and blessing to occupy, it was clear that we had to work together to fight these individual battles, and we'll continue to do that. And we'll continue really in every way possible, and we're looking at new ways all the time as membership organizations to communicate to our members. But it's absolutely vital that we also shape the thinking of this opinion leader community across the country. Now, the interesting thing is, when we did the survey work, we found that after literally calling tens and tens of thousands of people to get down to our sample, we found that about 2 out of 3 opinion leaders had actually been in a general aviation aircraft. And for those who had been in a general aviation aircraft, which is why I love your number so much, they think a lot more about general aviation. What they don't appreciate is how fragile it is. Intuitively, they know of an airport that's closed, and they know when something goes away, it doesn't come back. But they don't really know how fragile it is, and how user fees and taxes and regulatory burdens can really cripple this community we love so much. I will also tell you that as somebody, and don't hold this against me, but has kicked around Washington, D.C. for over 2 decades, if any group is not well understood, it's vulnerable. It's vulnerable to all the competing forces that are in Washington. Washington is a very competitive marketplace. The railroads want more money. Manufacturers want more money. Public employees want more money. Healthcare, uninsured people want healthcare insurance. All those programs cost money. And so unless we're active together defending what we treasure in general aviation, we're going to be vulnerable to others who are going to offer their case for why they need the funds. We launched General Aviation Serves America as really a way to gather as many groups and people and pilots and organizations as we could to tell the story from a pilot's perspective. Now, we picked a pilot. I've tried to learn fast, and Harrison Ford is one heck of a great enthusiast for everything EAA does. He's also an ALPA member who said, if you need my help, call me. And I said, well, I don't know when I'll call you, but I know I will call you. When we called him and said, we're going to launch this program, would you be one of our leading spokespeople? He said, absolutely, yes. Tom Haynes is back here, our wonderful editor of Pilot Magazine. Tom said, we would like to come film you. And he said, fine, but you've got to be here in 4 days. So Tom and the crew packed up, went out, shot the ads. Since then, we've had, if you come by our tent, you've seen some of the other people in the ads. It now includes Morgan Freeman, the actor, wonderful member, pilot, aviation enthusiast. But we also chose a doctor who flies to Tangier Island to take care of patients on an island in Chesapeake Bay that's oftentimes cut off from other forms of transportation. We filmed 3 generations of a family who uses aircraft to sell their tractors in North Dakota. We looked for pilots whose stories would have impact on members of Congress and on opinion leaders. And we've already had some early returns. We got a call by one of the publications whose online advertising we're using quite a bit or purchasing, I should say, from them. It's called the National Journal. After 10 days, they called us and they said, we've been doing these online ads for several years. We've never seen an online ad get as many clicks on it as your Harrison Ford ad. Actually, they called back about a week or so ago and they said, this thing is continuing. These ads are getting more clicks from the policy elite, if you will, in Washington. And the point is, we're getting a message across. It's the message that, you know, all of us use and deliver, but it's a message that opinion leaders in Washington have to hear. So we've kind of launched this campaign in April. Our very good members have already contributed over $1.5 million to it. We put in $1.5 million. Yes, communications costs a lot these days, but we were also rewarded in another way. We walked into a meeting with a White House official, second floor, west wing of the White House, and his deputy looked at me coming in through the door and he said, ah, the Harrison Ford Group is here. Now, ALPA has been around for 70 years. We'd only run the ad for about 7 weeks, but already the impact of a very well-known person close to EAA, close to ALPA, is making a difference. And from then, from that point, we talked about the messages that we're all concerned about. So General Aviation Serves America has had a pretty good launch, a very good launch, I believe. We're going to sustain it through the fall. We're continuing to raise funds for it. And we're going to work with all the organizations who now want to be part of this to figure out how we can make it even more effective next year in an election year, so that individuals running from office will talk to people in their community, the opinion leaders in their community, and they'll hear our general aviation story. It is, for me, a real privilege, frankly, to represent the general aviation community at AOPA. I've been a pilot for over 40 years. I've been a member of AOPA since 1973. I'm proud to tell you I'm a member of EAA as well. And to partner with Tom and his colleagues and my colleagues up here on the panel is something that we're all very much committed to. We look forward to working together, and thank you again, Tom, for having us.
Thanks, Craig. You know, we've covered important subjects such as GA under attack, alternative fuels, humanitarian aspects, how GA serves America. There's a lot on our plate. But another important issue, I'm going to call it an issue as much as a mandate. And our mandate is to grow the general aviation community. If we're going to serve, if we're going to protect, if we're going to defend, if we're going to fly, we've got to grow. We've got to have people that provide the infrastructure, that build the airplanes, that fly the airplanes. More importantly, we need the enthusiasts. You know, if you look at Oshkosh, for example, there's tens of thousands of people here who are passionate about aviation. Hundreds of thousands. But not all of them are pilots. Not all of them are aircraft owners. We have 5,000 volunteers who help put this convention on. A majority are not pilots. A majority do not own an airplane. But this is their way to participate and become engaged in aviation, keep the dream alive that someday they might. And whether they do or not, the fact is that they're involved. But the key here is, how do we grow the aviation community? We're an aging community, and we're a declining in size community. The statistics speak for themselves in terms of the number of pilots flying today versus just a short four years ago. And the average age of the pilot community, or the average age of an EA member, I'm sure it follows the same thing with AOPA. We're an aging association. Yes, we reached out to kids through Young Eagles, the 1.5 million, but what happens is the typical story. You have young people passionate about aviation, they get a job, they go to school, they get married, and all of a sudden those priorities take over and their passion for flight is there, but the ability to get involved goes away. Then all of a sudden the families are established, they're established in their job, the kids are grown up, and they finally pursue the dream they had when they were young people, but they're 40, 45, 50 years old when they do that. We need to break that cycle. If you think back, the two most important factors in growing the aviation community were the GI Bill and World War II. World War II trained a tremendous number of pilots, and the GI Bill made it affordable. When that went away, you saw a steady decline. And we need to build an infrastructure that grows aviation rather than maintains aviation. It's going to take a collaborative effort. Activities such as Oshkosh go a long way toward doing that. They charge the aviation batteries. They expose people to the opportunity. I believe that if we as an organization, we as a community, can encourage over 30,000 people to build an airplane and fly it, we can do 10 times that many in terms of people who learn how to fly it. As tough as it is, it's a lot easier to learn how to fly than build an airplane. The four P's of aviation: planes, people, passion, and participation. Participation takes all forms. That's our goal with an EAA, and a goal that we're going to work together with all the associations. Craig touched on it. I mentioned at the beginning of this commentary is the fact is that we need to collaborate and work together to maximize our resources, to stay focused on the issues, and address the problems and the opportunities. The problems and the opportunities. I'd like to put to this panel a question, whoever would like to take it on first, is that what is the number one thing we can address as a collaborative group? In other words, we talk about collaboration, but what's the area where we can work together that would have the most impact initially? Does anybody have any thoughts? That's a question people are asking, saying, well, you say you're going to work together, but what does that mean?
I'll take, only because I'm holding the mic, I think motivating our members, motivating however, wherever we find them, to, and Ed said it, to go out and get engaged, to tell people about their passion. I have to confess, because I thought I talked about flying all the time, I have to confess that after going to AOPA, I was getting letters from people who really had no idea how much I'd used an airplane, how much I flew. So I think we have to share our story and get our story out there to as many people as possible.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. I mean, the public relations aspect is critical. I spent a good portion of my life going around defending infrastructure, heliports, preserving the ones we have, trying to get new ones. And we're unique a little in a sense that we're trying to avoid airports, but that causes us to go into people's communities directly with a helicopter and a heliport operation. And the lack of knowledge is really killing us quite a bit. And the acceptance of the mode of transportation and the vehicle has the domino effect. If you go into a community and they're not aware or don't support you or don't understand what you're about, their immediate reaction is not in my neighborhood. I don't want you here. That translates to input to the elected officials who ultimately end up deciding yes or no whether you're going to be able to grow your operation or enhance, you know, your access to the community. So education is the key. And the other that we're concerned about is what you just described, World War II, is an extremely accurate depiction of the helicopter industry, only moved forward several years, and it was Vietnam. Having flown in Vietnam, I know that when I got out, there was 10 helicopter pilots for every job, based on the size of the industry and the supply coming out of the military. Today, we're faced with a potential shortage of experienced helicopter pilots and technicians in that end of the business. And our ability to convince these young people to engage in this industry and to participate as a career and even have pleasure flying to add the overall support to the industry is critical. And we're on the same level here in our industry is to make the young community aware of what we do and the general public. And that's critical. So,
Pete?
Tom, I just I'd echo what you said about the importance that we understand each other's issues and work together. Each one of these complex issues that we're tackling, Matt brought up an excellent one. Federal preemption that prevents the states from imposing specific rules on certain sectors of aviation. If we let an issue like that go and actually take hold, think of who the next target's going to be. You look at environmental regulation. With the as we go and pass environmental, whether it's a cap and trade system or some kind of carbon tax in this country, if we don't have federal preemption, what's going to happen? Each state that is now broke are going to come up with their own taxes to add to the taxes that the federal government is going to have. Large aircraft security program. Intuitively, you would think, well, that's Ed's membership that's mostly affected. But as soon as they impose regulation on aircraft 12,500 pounds above that's unreasonable, doesn't take into account at all the economic impact and the destruction that it does to the industry we have today, it's going to matriculate down to aircraft that weigh less. User fees. Does anybody think that if user fees are imposed, even if they only get charged to the business jet community initially – that eventually a government that is broke and is starved for money, has a deficit that's gargantuan, is not going to come to the rest of general aviation to go and try to pay for the bills. So all of these issues that we are all struggling with matter to every one of us in general aviation. And so it's so important that we know what each association is working and that we work these issues together.
Yeah, and I would take it from the association level where united we stand, divided we fall. I think a lot of people realize, but maybe not everyone understands, that last year and the year before, there was a conscious effort made to divide the general aviation community into business jets and piston operators. And a story was told of fat cats flying airplanes because they're luxurious, and piston operators on the other side. And there was a bright line distinction in the general aviation community, and you can separate them and pick them off one at a time. And I think that we've been doing forums like this at Oshkosh for a couple of years because we want to send the message, this community is united. You may be business aviation, you may be helicopter focused, you may have an expertise in home built, you may be a manufacturer, but you know what? We are all in this together. We have got to stick together. And we've got to make sure that everyone in our community understands that everyone must be an advocate. When you look at the attacks that are coming and the stereotypes that are being promoted, you recognize we've got to push back. There's a big effort going on right now to suggest that general aviation airports are either for fat cats flying big corporate aircraft and they don't need them, or for a bunch of rich hobbyists and we don't need them. The fact of the matter is, all of us know that general aviation airports are critical to our medical, critical to our mail, critical to our emergency preparedness. They were critical on 9/11. These are national assets that need to be protected, need to be treasured, need to be promoted. That's all of our responsibility. So all of us sticking together, recognizing what goes after one part of the community goes after all of us, and being a vocal advocate is the biggest, most important thing we can do as associations, we can do as a community, we can do as an industry.